You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Cott and I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports' Michael Gannon and Craig Swan. Guys, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you doing, chaps?
Good, Daniel. Michael, how are you?
All good, well, thanks. This is my favourite time of the week, guys, so can't I complain?
How bad is your week?
Monday.
Exactly, I know it's peaked in Monday afternoon.
Favorite part of Monday.
I think the best place for us to start is obviously at Dingwall. Celtic 2 wins from 2-0 in the Premiership. 3-1 win over Ross County at the weekend. But Craig, it wasn't straightforward. Not that anyone expected it would be.
It wasn't straightforward in the timing of the goals. In terms of the. Obviously, if it gets to 6 minutes to go and it's 1-1, then obviously it's slightly concerning for the Celtic supporters. But in terms of the performance, Celtic were in complete control throughout the game. Should have led at half-time. Dominated pretty much from start to finish. Ross County got an equaliser from a set piece and then maybe had 5-10 minutes after that when Joe Hart had to come up trumps for a save. But in general, I mean, Celtic will play worse than that and win games 3 or 4-0. It's just one of them, with it? They just kind of get the second goal and then lost an equaliser. So in terms of the timing of the goals and the sort of goals that clinched the game to make it 2-1 and 3-1, then, yeah, it would have been relatively stressful. But at the game, I was at the game myself, and there was always a feeling that Celtic would score again, so as they do often. But and I think the key thing is there's never any sense of panic within the team. Keep playing the same way, nice and calm, nice and patient. There's no... I mean, we saw that all through last season. I don't think that's telling anybody anything they don't know. Mm-hmm. And they just keep doing the same things. Patience, patience, patience. And they know they'll wear teams down and they'll get in because they've got quality. And they did it again.
And Mick, it was a debut goal for Jens, Moritz Jens, and from the start. Good header and a good performance.
Yeah, I thought he looked pretty decent. Maybe question marks about the Ross County goal. I thought he maybe caught under the ball a wee touch. I don't know. Swan was closer to the action than I was. He'll be able to tell you. But in general, I think he's looked the part. Like a ball playing centre-back. I think he's looked good. It's noticeable that Celtic have scored about 5 goals now in 2 games. 2 of them come from centre-halves, which is, I'm sure, we're pleased that the manager, Stephen Welsh, on the first day. And then Jens popped up one as well. So yeah, it's good to see your defenders weighing in. I think Celtic in the last few years maybe haven't scored enough of those kind of goals, kind of balls in the box and set pieces and all that stuff. So that all goes well. I think the word that Swan used there was an inevitability about Celtic's winning the weekend. I think that there isn't any sense of panic even the clock's ticking because they're creating so many chances, aren't they? It's amazing to think, like I said, they scored 5 goals in their first 2 games, and you're thinking, maybe the cutting edge isn't quite there yet. It's early in the season. It's only 2 games in. So they haven't quite found their real cutting edge, and yet they scored 5 goals in 2 games. So there's more to come. So, yeah, I think it's a really good positive start to the season with Celtic. I think they look in really good shape, and I think there's more to come.
You certainly, just to pick up on a thing Michael said there, Daniel, I'm not sure what was shown on the television highlights or what everybody saw, but Michael's right. Jens was caught at the goal. It wasn't the first time. It happened in the first half as well. Jakovic got away the one chance Ross County had and headed it over the bar. So he's there to stop the ball going in his own net. But you don't want to be too critical or judge too much after the first game. He was certainly comfortable on the ball. And what I will say is he made a couple of very important interventions. Mm-hmm. The end of the game as well, good tackles, read the game quite well. I know he was booked, but the guy kind of ran right through him. I don't think there was anything he could do about that. So yeah, he looked all right, but the number one priority is to keep the ball out your own net, and winning headers and set plays is against is key.
With Starfield back to full fitness now, would you imagine he comes back in for the game next weekend against Kilmarnock?
I would. Straight back in, I would think, as soon as he's ready to go. But whether that'll be this Sunday, I don't know, because Ange Postecoglou has made it clear he's not going to rush anyone. Starfield's had one full week's training. This will be the second week's training. You would assume there'll be a bounce game in there somewhere, or a 11 against 11 somewhere, to get him some game time. But it'll just depend on whether he wants to bring him back on the artificial pitch on Sunday. For that game, whether he feels he's up to speed or not. I think if once Cal Starfield's up to speed, I'm pretty certain he'll be the choice alongside Cameron Carragher.
And Mick, he didn't have a great deal to do, Joe Hart, but he pulled off a brilliant save at 1-1, a potentially crucial save to keep Celtic level.
Yeah, that's what he's there for. That's the reason why Celtic went and brought in a keeper of that quality, because he can produce those moments. It takes a special kind of goalkeeper to play for Celtic and indeed Rangers. When you go through periods of games where you have nothing to do, and then you're called on to make big saves out of the blue. I think Fraser Forster was great at it, wasn't he, as well? He was sit twiddling his thumbs for 89 minutes and then pull off a great save. And these are guys that earn you points. That's a particularly crucial part of the game, and he's made a really good save, and it's helped contribute towards 3 points. And it might get lost in the wash most weeks, those kind of moments. But I think Joe Hart is probably worth, I don't know, hard to quantify, isn't it, 10 to 12 points a season for Celtic? Is that fair, I think, Swanee?
Yeah, I think so. That's
a lot of points in a title race. And I think we saw it with the season before last, when Celtic didn't really have anyone making those big saves in big moments, in games that don't really get caught up in the highlights reel. Do you know what I mean? When it's one each in Dingwall and you go and win 3-1, that's a moment that's forgotten about. But it's a huge moment, and you take them for granted. But they have to be done. It has to be done. And that's why Celtic have got this guy in there. He's top notch. excuse me. Listen, as all goalkeepers, he's got the odd little moment in him at times. But the checks and balances are more than way up, because he makes these saves that count in the long run.
Mm-hmm. It was a reminder, Swanee, that Hart has just been a brilliant signing for Celtic.
Outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. I think you shouldn't overplay underplay the ability, as Michael says, the sheer quality of the goalkeeping. I do think the presence, the stature of him when he came in last season was very important. He's a big personality who'd done a lot in the game. And I think at that time, when Celtic needed steadying and needed some calming influences, he was a great guy to have around. I think the Celtic fans have bought into him. I think Joe Hart certainly bought into Celtic, which has been a big part of it as well. He seems to really get it and really enjoy it. And he's been asked to play an important role for Ange Postecoglou. And I think Celtic fans have to understand and accept that this season, Celtic will probably lose 2 terrible goals through Joe Hart having to play high up the pitch. That's the way Ange Postecoglou wants to do it. He wants him to play high. He wants him to, you know, get involved almost and playing almost laughably in the back three when Celtic have got possession. I'm exaggerating there, but you know what I mean. The high starting line and the way they play it. We saw it all through last season. They take chances. But the amount of goals Celtic will score off it, Mick used the phrase there, checks and balances. Celtic will score 20 to 25 goals this season because of the way they build it through the game. Mm-hmm. The way they take chances and play it out and play through the lines and they get in. And they'll score 25 or 30 goals through doing that this season. So when the one or two come, which inevitably will, there'll be a day when someone robs the keeper or something happens and it'll be seen as a calamity. Hopefully for Celtic, it'll be when they're 4-0 up one day and not at 1-1 or 0-0 in a game. It will happen, but the positives far outweigh the negatives.
You touched on this one. His enthusiasm has brought a lot to that dressing room as well, hasn't it? This is a guy, 35, 36 year old, he's been there, done it, won leagues in England, played 75 times for England. I mean, ridiculous that there was actually people last season questioning his signing. I mean, it's actually preposterous, a guy that calibre. But he's come in and he could have been a guy.
It would have been ridiculous enough if he was replacing Fraser Forster. He was replacing Vatalas Barkas. Still people are thinking it wasn't a good idea.
It was crazy stuff. But listen, we know, we've seen guys that come up to Scotland that kind of time in their careers, and they haven't really had that kind of enthusiasm about them. I mean, they've kind of I've kind of pitched up like tourists. I kind of thought, oh, you know what? I fancy a wee bit of that atmosphere up there and all that. So I got there and I'll do all right. It's only Scotland. And they completely get bombed out. We've seen guys in the last 20, 30 years doing the same thing. Big names that have come up and just completely tanked up here in that environment. But as he's come in and he's this enthusiasm. And he, like you say, he's really bought into it. And he sets a big standard for those around about him as well in training and on the pitch. And I think he was a huge figure in last year's league win. And you can see he's thrown himself into it. And I was hearing apparently he was down south back home with his family at the weekend. Some of them I knew down there bumped into him. And his son's running about wearing his Celtic away kit. I mean, he's just absolutely bought into it. And that's the kind of thing that punters, no wonder they love him, because he's been superb for them.
The one guy that we haven't mentioned yet from Saturday's game is Jota, who was absolutely outstanding. Swanee, another couple of assists. And I saw this debate kind of going on social media yesterday, and I saw Scott Allen and Chris Boyd kind of talking about it on Sky Sports. But I would put it to you that he's the best player in the league right now.
Right now, it's hard to argue. I mean, everybody's entitled to an opinion of what they think, whether you agree with it or disagree with it. Personally, I would be in the camp that Jota's the most talented footballer in the country. Yeah, I mean, you have to accept that everybody has strengths in their own ways. You know, there'll be, you know, guys like Josip Juranovic are tremendous as fullbacks, and Carter Vickers as great as a centre half. You know, I'm just talking about Celtic here. Callum McGregor to me is an absolutely wonderful player and does things that Jota couldn't do, you know, in terms of gelling the team together and making the whole thing work. But if you're talking about just ability to create things and score goals and make goals and trickery, and then he's a level above a lot of players at the moment in Scottish. But I would say he's the best for that. I would still say, as an all-round footballer, Callum McGregor's the best player in the country. But if you're talking about invention and creation and goals, then it's Jota.
What do you think, Mick? Where would you rate him in the...
I don't like agreeing wholeheartedly with Swanee at the best times, but I can't really complain what he said there. I think he's bang on. I think as an all-round football player, I think Callum McGregor's hard to top, really, in terms of, it's a guy who can play anywhere on the pitch and still contribute to a high standard. But in terms of ability and outcome, I think Jota's hard to top in terms of in Scotland. I mean, you look at, he's played two games, he's got a goal and three assists, is that right, so far?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to talk about, see, you're attacking players, you love to see them beating a player, you love to see the tricks, the pace and all that stuff, the efforts, but you need to see end product. And sometimes with wingers, they can drive you nuts because they've got all that ability and all that stuff, and sometimes you don't get the end product. And these days, you know what it's like with the analytics and stats and all that stuff, you can't hide anywhere as an attacker these days, because your numbers, you get assists and goal creations and XGs and all that stuff. Well Jota's got all that. They're off the chart.
No.
Did I say it? Is it GX or XG? Sorry, I'm never really sure. But his numbers are all off the chart. So that, what more do you need? There's a guy with gets fans off the seats, and he has an end product worth his weight in gold.
And another winger on the other side whose numbers are absolutely fantastic is Lila Bada. He was talking in the build-up to the game, Swanee, about how he misses his big brother near Beaton and how he's kind of struggled a bit without him. But it didn't show in the pitch at the weekend. An absolute cracker to seal the 3 points.
In fairness, it hasn't showed from the minute he walked in the door at 19 in a strange country and scored in his debut against Midtjylland. I mean, I made a point in the match report today that Celtic really got going last year with Abada off the right, Jota off the left, and Jota through Kyogo through the centre. That was the three. When Celtic's bandwagon really got rolling last year through the autumn, they were the key men. Abada was absolutely brilliant. You forget that in that period just prior to Christmas, when Kyogo was struggling with injury and Giakoumakis was out, Abada played up front as well. I mean, for a guy that young to adapt so quickly, he was... I don't know, Ange Postecoglou sees him in training every day. I don't know whether he saw just a small shading in form or whether he thought the boy needed refresh. But Dyson Maeda obviously got the call over Abada for the majority of the sort of run-in last year, the sort of last 12, 14 games. It was Abada was mainly on the bench while Maeda played. But whenever Abada plays, there's always something. To go back to Michael's phrase about Jota with end product, Will Abada gives you end product. Goal scoring record last year was excellent for the games that he played. People forget as well, he played more league games than anyone last year, Lila Bada, even though he didn't start as many as some. Yes, I think he played some of the 36 of the game. So for a young guy to do that, it shows he's robust. But again, he's quick. There's end product. His final pass is good. Well, it can be better at times. But I mean, he came on the pitch on Saturday. First act, skinned the fullback, lifted a lovely ball up for Matt O'Reilly, who really should have buried it for 2-0 right after Kyogo had scored the first goal. His finish was out of this world. We've seen him doing that sort of out-turn run, support line at the back post and scoring 19 goals last season. Abada's top class. Mm-hmm. And at 20 years of age, I don't know where he's going to end up in terms of his football career, because he's got pretty much the lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to finish on the game at the weekend, guys, Mick, it was a kind of weird game again for Kyogo. I thought he scored a really good goal, taken brilliantly. But I think, I don't know, you guys might disagree, but I thought he's had quite a quiet opening start to the season. And I felt like at the weekend it was maybe set up a bit more for Jackie Marcus.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I take your point. I think he's such an explosive impact last season. It's difficult. It's going to be difficult to kind of replicate that. And I think a lot of his success last year was his unpredictability. When he plays in a way that is not your typical centre forward, his movement is unreal. There's going to be games when it's hard to utilise that because defences are tight and organised and all that stuff. And that might have been one of those kind of games at the weekend. I think you might see the best of him in the big wide open spaces at Celtic Park and that kind of stuff. I think Jackie Marcus is obviously he missed a wee bit of pre-season. He's a great option to have as well. I don't have any concerns about Kyogo, really. I think he's going to be lively again this year. I think a lot of these guys, I mean, especially Abada and Kyogo, I know that the manager keeps talking about improving all the time. That's not always realistic. I mean, you can't just improve all the time. Otherwise, they'll end up playing for Real Madrid. At some point, there's going to be wee dips and it's going to be hard to maintain. I'd be amazed if Abada and Kyogo can hit the heights achieved at some points last season for the whole campaign. There's going to be times when it slightly dips. It's a big ask for them to replicate that form they showed last season because they were so spectacular. Mm-hmm. But they've got the ability to do it, and I think Kyogo will score a barrel of goals because he's just a natural kind of finisher as well. When he finishing at the weekend wasn't that straightforward, but he made it look easy, didn't he?
Aye.
And that's what he does. I mean, look at his goals. Look back to the cup final last year. He made ridiculously hard goals look dead easy. So I don't think there's any concerns about him. I think he will kick into gear. And he'll score a bad load. I've no doubt about it. And the option, and certainly I've got the option of Jackie Marcus, who I think certainly play well when he's in the team. I think he's a good focal point for them at times. Particularly away from home. I think if he'd played a bit more in pre-season, he might have started up there in Dingwall. So it's a great option to have for Celtic, but I wouldn't have any concerns about Kyogo, that's for sure.
It's a nice headache, Swanee, to have two quality forwards.
No, exactly.
I think there's always been a situation at Celtic in recent times where there is a, you know, if you've got, say, in your head a main striker, if he doesn't play, it's a downgrade. You know, if Edouard didn't start, it was a downgrade. If Dembele didn't start, it was a downgrade. I think that's the beauty of it for Celtic now is if the team sheet comes out at Rugby Park on Sunday, I don't think any Celtic supporter will be bothered whether it's Jackie Marcus or Kyogo. Mm-hmm. They know they're going to get a threat and they know there's every chance they're going to get a goal. So aye. I think that's what the manager is trying to build. I mean, absolutely nothing against, you know, the lads that came in last season, but there was times when Celtic were using Adam Moffat and Joey Dawson had to come on at McDermott Park and Leila Bada was filling in and, you know, there was, I think Michael might correct me on this, I think there might have been a home game with Motherwell when David Turnbull almost played up front. You cannot avoid those situations without, you know, it's the opposite end of two pieces of strength. You cannot avoid a situation where if you build a good squad, you're going to have a situation where good players are going to be left out. Nothing you can do about it. And they're each as good as the other and they each have their own qualities, but what they both guarantee is goals. And I think however he chooses to mix and match it, switch them around,
Oh, is that Swanee just done a bunk midway through his point there?
That's we'll try and get him back in a wee second.
I was just wondering what one of them starts at Robbie Park next weekend. Because Kilmarnock have got a pretty brutish back division. I mean, their two centre halves are both 6'4", 6'5". And the question I'd want to ask, do you go with Jackie Marcus for the physical presence against those two? Or do you go for the wee guy in Kyogo who could maybe get in and use pace to kind of get them turning? That's quite a nice decision to have, because if I'm Derek McInnes, I'm thinking, how's he going to play it?
Got you back, Swanee. We lost you then.
Ah, sorry. I'm back.
You know, put 10 bob in the meter for your Wi-Fi.
Probably not.
I was just asking, Swanee, who do you play at Robbie Park? Jackie Marcus.
It's kind of the same. I mean, at halftime on Saturday, the majority of people who were watching the game, and I would bet the majority of Celtic fans that were in the stadium were looking for Jackie Marcus to come on at halftime, because they thought, quite rightly, Ross County were not holding a high line, they were staying deep, they were staying compact, and Kyogo didn't have any spaces to run into, and it was hard for him. And you think Jackie Marcus is going to be more suited to that. And maybe he would have been, but within 3 minutes of halftime, Kyogo scored, so... I don't know, from a freshness point of view, maybe Jackie Marcus, Derek McInnes isn't going to set Kilmarnock out to come out and play against Celtic. That's not going to happen. Going to be another pack defence. So does that lean you towards Jackie Marcus? Possibly. Quite possibly, because if you think about freshening the team up and keeping them, you know, and keeping them ticking over and giving everyone a chance, the following game Celtic play is then Hearts at Celtic Park. As you talk about the mass spaces, Hearts will come out and have a go against Celtic because they're a big team in Scotland, and they will try, and I'm not saying they're going to go gung-ho, but you would imagine there'll be more room for Kyogo at Celtic Park, so if you're going to rotate it and change it, then maybe Jackie Marcus for Rugby Park. But as I said, if Kyogo gets an odd on Saturday, I don't think anybody's going to complain. But if it was me, I would maybe play Jackie Marcus on Sunday.
Well, see, that's the question. It was just mentioned there now that the Kelly centre halves, I mean, the two of them are 6'4", 6'5", big guys, big physical guys. The danger if you play Jackie Marcus, you may be tempted to try and match them physically. That's maybe playing it in their hands. Do you play the wee guy with a bit of pace? But then they'll sit deep in the I think it's a tricky one to work out the way to play it, because it could go either way, couldn't it?
But you just know, in your heart of hearts, you just know whichever one of them plays is going to score. That's the thing. You know, you're not leaving out the star striker to replace him with someone who's not as good as a backup.
Yeah,
it's different styles to crack the same code, and inevitably one of them will. You've probably got no doubt about that.
Away from matters on the pitch, guys. Since we last did the podcast, obviously the sad passing of John. Yogi Hughes, a genuine Celtic legend, Mick, and obviously I think a bit before our time, but 197 goals for Celtic, European Cup winner, and as I say, a bona fide, you know, legend.
Yeah, definitely. I think, especially, I'm from the east end of the city, and he came from this neck of the woods as well. A big name, big character. I know he didn't play in the match in Lisbon, but definitely one of the Lisbon Lions for sure. Made 11-12 years at Celtic Park, the most successful period in the club's history. But I mean, before my time, I didn't see him. I'm playing, obviously, here the stories, and you know the tales. I think the European Cup semi-final goal against Leeds at Hampden in front of 140,000 was it, the record attendance in European football. I think that's not a bad moment to go down in history for, is it? But yeah, it's sad. I mean, what's 79? So I mean, not that old. Mm. It's another one of these greats that have gone, unfortunately. And it's also a sad time for his family. But what a legacy he's left behind.
And Swanee, I was saying to Mick just before the podcast, 197 goals, European Cup. You only get 8 Scotland caps, which just seems absurd.
Yeah, that's maybe just the way it was back then. I guess we, you know, how the selection worked. There's not much more I can add to what Mike said. The guy was part of the Lisbon Lions unit, and his fellow Lisbon Lion, Jim Craig, called him one of the greats. I think you can add anything to that.
Absolutely. Right, guys, I think it's probably best to end today's podcast with a little bit of transfer talk. We're obviously still in the midst of the transfer window. lots of rumours on a daily basis. And I thought, Mick, it was interesting to see Ange Postecoglou in his press conference before the Ross County game say that Celtic are still active in the transfer window.
Well, aye. I mean, he's keeping the door open. Which is funny because in January he said he was done and signed about three more players, didn't he? So I would take whatever managers say in transfer windows with a massive pinch of salt. Clearly he's keeping his options open. There's always, I mean, listen, every manager wants to keep continually adding to his squad, and he's no different. So I think he, being active in the market and being ready to move it and comes up, I think is wise. I think the squad is in decent shape just now. I think if you're going to actually improve the starting 11 to get those kind of players, I think cost a lot of money, and they spent a few quid already this summer. I think it could change as we speak, right? You know how it works in the transfer market, and things can move quickly. But I think we're in a bit of a lull just now. I think Celtic might want to get some guys off the books first. Some of the fringe guys that are earning a few quid, and then get a few of them off the books to clear a bit of room. I wouldn't be surprised if we get towards the edge of the window, maybe making a move. I wouldn't be surprised to see another one of these kind of, or one or two of these loan deals with a view to buy type situations, which kind of bumps into next summer's budget as well. Not that I think Celtic are tight for cash. I think they're plenty of dough just now, but having no real sales this summer so far, you're always mindful of that kind of thing. So I think there will be movement. I think we're definitely guys leaving, and I think there'll be one or two coming in. It might be loans, or it might be say kind of last minute additions that the both are a squad rather than starting 11. I think the starting 11 is fairly solid at the moment. You need to keep these guys happy as well. I still think you could do another midfield player maybe as well, perhaps. And it depends on who goes out really. But yeah, there will be business, I think.
And Swanee, do you think it's fair enough to say that it is probably players out, you know, the likes of McCarthy, Julian, Ayeti? There is, I mean, that's, they were a lot of money between them.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, even then, if they just go out on loan deals and Celtic, we have to cover some of that money as well. I mean, it's not quite as simple as just knowing that you're going to get them sold. I think Michael's right. It always works on a domino effect. The squad's pretty big at the moment. I think we're in a situation where, as Michael says, guys will have to leave. The ones you named look likely. If Celtic can get takers for them, and then you maybe try and fill those spots. But again, it goes back to what Michael says. Don't want to bloat the squad if there's, you know, if Julian goes, does he feel that the four centre-halves he's got and Welsh, Jens, Starfelt and Carlifax are the first, you know, you wouldn't just go and get another centre-half for the sake of it. Mm-hmm. There is no point to doing that. I would be in mixed camp. I just do not see a £6-10 million player coming in now, because Celtic have spent, as Mick says, I must have said as Mick says about 26 times. They've spent a lot of money. You know, Carter Vickers and Jota, just because they were there before, there was a lot of money spent to keep them. So money, I just don't see another big one. I'm in the camp of thinking that there will be some subtle additions when guys leave, but nothing too spectacular, I think. Ange showed in January to get the majority of his business done early. He had a quote the other week where he said some like the bulk of the business or the key part of the business has been done already. So it's now just subtle tweaks and additions, I think.
That's neat. He brought in 17 players last season. He built a pretty much, apart from perhaps, I mean, Callum McGregor, it's now an entirely new starting 11. So you're now looking, where's the money getting spent and where does it go into the first 11? You're not going to buy something to replace a Matt O'Reilly or a Kyogo or a Giakoumakis, a Jota, a Bada. You've got James Forrest still there as well. Juranovic right back. You bought a new left back, new centre-half, three new centre-halves really. So where does that money go? I mean, you're talking about spending £8-10 million to replace guys who've already been bought in the last 12 months. So I don't see the need for it. I think if they get a chance of a kind of an exciting loan deal, like a young guy from English market that could come in, then yeah, I think they'll jump at it. But there's not the same usual demand and panic at Celtic this transfer window to go out and chase signings. I think they're in fairly decent shape.
And as you know yourself, Michael, we've talked about it many times. the domino effect that I speak about in the merry-go-round doesn't really kick in until last week.
No.
When you know, people are on the phone now, agents are getting calls, they're trying to barter for another couple of extra grand a week, everybody's trying to get a deal down. But at some point, there's a breaking point where about 5 days before the window closes, somebody makes the first move, bang, and then everything starts to trickle down after that. Say, for instance, there's a brilliant young defensive central midfield player at Manchester United. Manchester United is a bad example given their shambles. Say Arsenal, a brilliant young defensive midfield player there that's not available for a loan just now, but Arsenal go and get somebody 5 days before the window closes, and then he becomes available. It just starts to become the knock-on effect. We've all seen it a million times.
Listen, Celtic aren't immune either to somebody coming in and looking at the, I mean, look, you're not thinking this summer. There's not been a lot of talk about Celtic players attracting interest. I'm not entirely sure why not, but especially in England, when clubs in their season started, and there's already teams that are under a bit of pressure in England after one weekend, who's to say that they're not going to say, do you know what? Callum McGregor is 28, 29 years old. There's a £25 million bid. Look at Jota in the last fortnight and think, you know what? We can get him for 20 million quid. It might be that someone's going to come and chat the door in the next 2 weeks. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody tries something with a... I mean, there was some whispers about Matt O'Reilly attracting attention down south already as well. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody came in, especially the English market shows no signs of easing up in terms of finances. And teams now in the bottom half of the Premier League England are throwing mega money at signings. I wouldn't be shocked if there's a phone call or two made in the last week of the window to Celtic, which means Celtic have to have guys lined up because they might have to. I mean, if a silly money comes in bid for a player at Celtic, they're not immune to that. I mean, it's a settled squad. They all seem particularly content to be where they are just now. But if you're getting offered 70, 80 grand a week somewhere down south, that's going to make you look. And likewise, if you're the Celtic board and something's about a £20 million plus bid for someone, you're going to have a look. Mm-hmm. So they have to be ready to jump in case of that scenario. I think that's also has. It's not something that's really been spoken about this summer at Celtic for whatever reason, but it's something they have to be wary of.
I guess.
Daniel, there's going to be good succession planning as well, because you saw in January how good the succession, you know, we weren't aware of it at the time, but you saw subsequently, obviously, Neil Beaton and Tom Rogic left. Ange Postecoglou had already replaced them in January.
Yeah.
Matt O'Reilly and Boateng. He was ahead of the game.
Yeah.
I would be pretty sure Celtic right now are sourcing Europe for a right back, just in case Josip Juranovic is an outstanding Champions League. Plays for Croatia in the World Cup, and they get to the World Cup final again. What sort of telephone numbers are you going to go off of him?
Yeah.
And then that's where Postecoglou looks to be ahead of the game here. I think in terms of his point about the summer, I think he's right. In terms of English clubs making calls or someone making calls, I think Celtic are in a strong position just now because of the Champions League. Because if you're Celtic, you're thinking, well, why am I going to let someone go just now for X when I've got six group games where they could shine? And then what are they worth?
Yeah.
I mean, Issa Dembele scored two goals against Manchester City and was suddenly worth 20 million quid.
Yeah.
But they're worth 20 million quid for scoring hat-tricks against Inverness.
Yeah. But you can't always control the market. That's
no, you can't.
Because if a Crystal Palace or a Bournemouth or Everton or these teams say there's 25 million quid for one of your top players, you've got an issue there, regardless of when and where it happens. So when that window's open, you're always in danger of that happening. And you have to be nimble to react quickly. I mean, we've seen windows in the past. Celtic players sold late in windows. Dembele went, but they had Edouard on the books. Van Dijk as well. These things happen, and you have to be ready for it.
The slight difference here, Mick, I would say, was certainly with Van Dijk was that was more a case of, you know, not reaching the Champions League group stages and having to then sell a big gun.
Yeah, sure.
Cover the loss. Now, Virgil van Dijk wanted to leave anyway and was probably only there at the end of the qualifiers because Celtic told him you need to stay through the qualifiers to try and get the club get through. But I take your point, Philly. I just think this year actually in the group stages.
Yeah, but there's so much money swung around down south that there is clubs that are going to be looking to try and pick up players frantically in the next few weeks.
But you imagine it was this season, Michael, and Celtic, what's the date of the last Champions League qualifier? The 24th August? Then you would be into that same scenario that Celtic were in between the 24th and the 31st. Right, which big gun's going to fund it if they don't make it? And that's the great thing. It's not there for Celtic this year. They don't have to worry about that. They've got the money. But again, yeah. I take your point on board. If someone throws silly money, as English clubs have been known to do.
I guess time will tell, guys. We've just got just over 3 weeks left in the window. But in the meantime, I think that brings us to the end of today's Record Celtic podcast. I should say for everyone listening, you can find us at Record Sport on Facebook, at Record_Sport on Twitter, and at Daily_Record_Sport on Instagram. Guys, it's always a pleasure.
No problem. All the best, chaps.
And see you guys.
And thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week. Cheers.
Bye.